Welcome. You're listening to Pediatric Insights, Advances and Innovations with Children's Health, where we explore the latest in pediatric care and research. I'm Melanie Cole, and today we're discussing care for athletes with osteochondritis dissecans. We're speaking with Dr. John Pawlowski. He's board-certified orthopedic surgeon with the Children's Health Andrews Institute for Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. We're going to be discussing his research focus on treatments for osteochondritis dissecans, advances in treating patients, and how these treatments are different than the others out there. Doctor, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's start by a working definition of osteochondritis dissecans. Tell us a little bit about it.
The way I explain it to patients, it's a softening of the bone that's underneath the articular cartilage. So bone is kind of the hard stuff that supports our skeleton, and then cartilage is the smooth bearing surface that keeps our joints moving smoothly. So what I kind of relate it to, it's like the subfloor in your house with the carpeting over the top. The carpeting is nice to walk on, which would be the cartilage, and the subfloor, the plywood below, is the bone, basically. And so when that bone recedes and softens, it's like cutting a hole in the wood below your carpet. And over time, the cartilage can't take that much stress. So over time, the cartilage will crack, much like the carpet would eventually tear. And then you're left with a big hole there. And so the key to osteochondritis dissecans is that we get that bone underneath the heel before that cartilage breaks down, which is really the goal of treatment.
So for other providers who might see this, what are some of the complications if it's left untreated? Are we worried about the development of osteoarthritis at a more early age that could result in progressive pain and disability for the athlete?
Yes, and that's why it's important to diagnose these things as children, and that's actually in our research group's definition, is basically that this is a pediatric cartilage disease that then progresses over years to be adult osteoarthritis, which we know is a big public health burden. So the trick is diagnosing these things early when they're more amenable to simpler treatments. And the problem is that they present in very vague ways. A lot of kids have knee pain, and this kind of mimics a lot of just knee pain that's related to growth and things like that. So the key is picking up on these things early.
As you pointed out, children come up with knee pain, especially if they are a soccer player, a hockey player, you know, any of these sports that kids are in, and knee pain can be really subjective. How do you diagnose that that's what this is?
Yeah, and it's difficult. The symptoms are not very specific to osteochondritis dissecans, and almost 100% of children, while they're growing at some point, especially if they're active, will have some sort of vague complaints of knee pain. So most of these things are, you know, related to the skeleton growing and muscles being tight and just sort of things related to growth. Osteochondritis dissecans, however, is not really related to those things, but presents in much the same way. So what I usually tell people is, you know, obviously, especially for pediatricians and primary care providers, x-raying every child with knee pain is really not productive and probably too much radiation and a waste of x-ray. However, those kids that don't get better following the normal treatment of stretching and physical therapy and just kind of getting better over time, I usually give them about 6 weeks to get better. And then at that point, they're not getting better and they still have knee pain. They probably should get an x-ray just to check, because this is something you can see on a plain x-ray. You don't need an MRI at that point. You just need a plain x-ray as kind of a screening exam for it.
Well, thank you for that explanation about that clinical presentation and the difficulty in diagnosing it right at the outset. Tell us a little bit about your research, doctor, your focus as far as treatment options.
So we're part of a multi-center national group called Research in Osteochondritis Dissecans of the Knee, and it's a group of pediatric hospitals around the country, and we've been doing this for probably about 15 years or so. The acronym we go by is ROC, just to make it easy. But what our focus has been is that OCD is a relatively rare disease, and so we needed to get multiple centers to collect enough patients with it to really be able to study it effectively. So that's what we've done. There's about 20 or so centers around the country where we gather our patients that have OCD, and we treat them a variety of different ways, you know, just according to the standard of care, and then we see how they do. So it's not a blinded experiment or anything. It's just seeing how our patients are doing, but it's getting enough of those patients together so that we can get some effective numbers and some understanding of how our treatments affect this disease. So now, actually, our most recent update is over the last few years, we've actually gathered about 1,000 patients in the study that we can make some really meaningful statements and analysis regarding what we think the best treatments for this disease are.
Well, what do you think the best treatments for this disease are? What advances have you made? And tell us about some of the non-surgical and then surgical options you have.
Sure. So the treatment is really wide ranging. It's based on, you know, patient age, how mature their skeleton is, how close they are to being done growing, and how what we call the stability of the lesion. So younger children with what we call a stable lesion, and stable would mean that that cartilage hasn't broken down yet. The bone may be soft underneath, but the cartilage is still intact over the top. Those children are very amenable to even non-surgical things, and most of them will heal without surgery. And we do things like bracing or casting or activity restrictions and follow them. The next level up in that is the kids that don't heal with non-operative treatment after about 3 to 6 months or so would be candidates for drilling. And drilling is basically where we take a small wire or drill bit and drill into the bone underneath the cartilage to stimulate that bone to fill in and heal and support that cartilage again. Subsequent treatments to that, if the cartilage is broken down, a lot of times we can repair the lesion with whether it's bone grafting or small screws and things like that, or in the really extreme cases where that cartilage is completely broken down and you just have an empty hole there, there are things called osteochondral allografts, which are basically bone cartilage transplants, or something called autologous chondrocyte implantation, which is taking the patient's own cells, growing them in culture, and then re-implanting them. And that's where the focus of one of our trials is going right now, is to get a pediatric indication for that particular technology.
What about return to play, Dr. Pawlowski, for athletes, for their coaches, for the parents, and for other providers, their primary care provider, when that child is asking their pediatrician, when can I go back and when can I play again? We know that athletes want to get back on the field. What do you want the providers to counsel their patients on?
Yeah, and that's, you're really hitting on one of the most challenging parts of this disease. Not only is getting to heal a challenge, but the healing process is relatively slow. I always tell people it's more like a stress fracture than an acute fracture. We know stress fractures take a long time to develop, and they also take a long time to heal. The same way with osteochondritis desiccans. And fortunately for the non-operatively treated ones, sometimes they heal rather quickly, but sometimes they can hang around for a while. And really, you take these really, really active kids and you tell them, well, you can't play soccer for, you know, 6 months or 9 months sometimes. And that's the psychological aspects of this can be almost more challenging than just the disease itself. And so I usually tell them, you know, first you got to be pain-free. And second thing is that lesion has to be getting better based on your x-rays. And you can't have swelling, you can't have any kind of symptoms. And the understanding that they really have to have is that if we can get it to heal at a young age, their prospect of having a normal knee for their life is actually excellent. If we let that go and break down, then their prospects of early onset arthritis and all those things are very high. So it's really to their advantage, although it's difficult to tell a 13 or 14 year old soccer player that you can't play for a few months. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a small price to pay for a lifetime of a healthy knee.
Well, it certainly is, and that's why it's important for pediatricians to follow up with their patients, make sure that they are really doing the therapy and the activity modification that's necessary. Is there a specific or unique case that you'd like to talk about, Doctor?
We have some challenging cases here and there where we do interesting things like bone cartilage transplants, and we've got several football players and soccer players right now that have actually had long-term follow-up with the osteochondral allograft as well as the ACI procedure, the MACI procedure, which is the implant of their own cartilage cells. And oftentimes these are combined with alignment procedures. If they have a limb that's out of alignment, sometimes we'll have to do osteotomies and things like that. These more complicated cases really take an understanding of what the limb alignment is, how the forces are transferred across the cartilage, and then what treatments are appropriate in the face of malalignment and cartilage problems. So it can get quite complicated and involve multiple different types of procedures, usually which we can do at the same time, but it does take a comprehensive look at the entire limb as opposed to just that cartilage defect.
As we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts for other providers that might be seeing this within their practice and what you'd like them to know about referral and when you feel it's important that they refer to the experts at Children's Health?
The main thing is recognition. And most of the time, if you don't have a patient getting better after about 6 weeks of the normal treatment that you prescribe for knee pain, it's a good idea to get an x-ray. Following the x-ray, we look at things like MRI staging and those sorts of advanced imaging studies. So that's really the time to refer. Once you diagnose it on a plain x-ray, then it opens up a whole really vast range of treatment options depending on multiple factors. So that's really the time, you know, the orthopedic surgeon would like to see the patient. And that's the time, you know, I'd really like to see the patient to counsel them on where we go from there and really start that treatment process. Hopefully it's non-operative with a brace and we can get them back pretty quickly, but then sometimes it gets more complicated. But those are things we really, from an orthopedic surgeon standpoint, we really like to manage those from the beginning.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pawlowski, for your time with us today. today and to our audience for listening to Pediatric Insights, Advances and Innovations with Children's Health, where we explore the latest in pediatric care and research. You can find more information at childrens.com/Andrews. And if you found this podcast helpful, please rate and review or share the episode, and please follow Children's Health on your social channels.